Subway has teamed up with Live Nation to bring you great food and great music for a great value. Right now, buy a Subway $5 footlong and get a Live Nation concert ticket for $5 to participating Live Nation shows like Nickelback, The Fray, and Crew Fest 2. Ticket price does not include fees. See store for details. Subway. Eat fresh.
Eat fresh.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report in studio. One of the creators of South Park.
It's really nice in studio. This way, you're calling this a studio?
Yeah, sure. One of the stars of basketball.
Yeah. Put that right at the front. Put that on the thing.
Of course I did. I almost put that ahead of South Park. I mean, you were really running some stuff in that movie, the star sponsor baseball. Integration, all that stuff.
Yeah,
we were way ahead of your time.
We were way ahead of it. We were way ahead of it with that. Our sports movie.
Well, speaking of sponsors, I should mention that you're on the Subway Fresh Take hotline, even though you're in person.
So I'm living basketball right now. That's what's happening right now.
thanks for coming on. Right now, it's hard to get your time because you're doing the season right now.
Yeah, we're just like a week out of, well, our first show's on the air, I should know exactly, October 7th or 8th.
Ooh.
Whatever the Wednesday is.
Okay.
And so we're supposed to be at work right now, and actually Trey's out of town today speaking in at some university in Michigan for a family friend, favor. So he's doing one of those things.
Favors.
And so I have the day off, so I came over here.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Is this still a continuation of season 13, or we're now in season 14?
No, we're in season 13 and a half. Yeah,
right.
Second part.
Because you guys split it up now.
Yeah.
You do, didn't you used to do 17 straight, or just split those up too?
We did whatever. It's like, you know, when you're on cable, you got to make up your own rules.
Yeah.
Or somebody makes them up for you and imposes them on you, but you don't. Then you don't do the network television thing where you do 22 a year or however they do it. I don't even know.
So we did seven.
Yeah, we do 7 and 7. And that's after, you know, experimenting. We used to do 3 runs of 6. And then we just kind of like settled on, we can't do more than 7 in a row at one time, we don't feel like. And we don't want to work that hard. So we figured 14 is the least you can get away with a year. So that's what we do. And yeah. It's hard work when we work. We really work our ass off, though.
Yeah, I was actually very, very surprised and actually couldn't believe how much time you actually put into it as you're doing it, because you don't really even start working on it until like a week before.
Yeah. We basically, it's a controlled cram session. So it's like, you're not going to get you're not even going to start your paper till the night before.
Yeah.
So you don't even worry about it until the afternoon before.
Right.
That's basically our attitude. And we had the summer off. We worked on some other stuff. And then we had 3 weeks off. I didn't see Trey, didn't talk to him for like 3 weeks. And then we showed up in the office last week. And we're like, okay, what should we do? And that's about what we do, really.
You had one summer where you were like, oh, let's write something ahead of time. And it was a disaster, right?
It's a total disaster. If we work on an episode ahead of time, we'll end up changing it all in the last week anyway and cramming. And we've just done that too many times. So now we just wait till the last week.
It just works better. You need the urgency. You need the energy.
We do. This is totally self-rationalization, because it really comes out of just putting it off. But now we've come up with our theory of why it works. And it kind of is like a live show a little bit. You know, knowing Bill Hader and talking to him a bit about like the Saturday Night Live schedule, which I've always been kind of fascinated with how they pull that off and why they pull it off that way.
Yeah, when sticking to a 1975 model. Basically.
Yeah, why don't you do, I don't know, work harder and make a better show? Like, just that thing. Because, like, some of Saturday Night Live is amazing, but some of it isn't amazing. But what is amazing about it is, yes, they can make it funnier, but this is the show they've decided to do. You know what I mean? So it's like, the model of it is, like, part of the compelling part of watching it, you know? And it's like, yeah, but if you work 2 weeks, wouldn't you make it funnier, you know? And it's like, well, yeah, but then it wouldn't be Saturday Night Live. So it's a little bit of like South Park is like, there's a live show energy we try to kind of capture, or at least Trey and I do, where it's just like, this is it. We're doing it this week. We live it. We breathe it. We eat it. And then next week, I can't even tell you what we did. You know, we just forget immediately what we did.
I totally understand it, because I think some people are just wired that way. They need the fear of the deadline. And I, that's, you know, that's how I do my columns. I never, when I did this book, it was like the hardest thing for me to do. It'd be like, all right, I got to write this thing today, but I don't have a deadline for it.
Yeah.
So I had all these self-imposed deadlines in my head, but I had so much trouble with it because I need that fear of, oh my God, my column's doing 6 hours and I have 500 words. What am I going to do?
Right.
And that's when it gets gone.
Deadlines are great for creativity.
So in college, you were like me, you probably did everything the night before, right?
Yeah, or the morning before.
5 a.m. 3 a.m. Papers, yeah.
Just go to bed. Go to bed and totally happy and then wake up at 3 and be like, all right, time to start, you know.
Now, if
time
you,
to start in this
would you rather be like that or if you, like on eBay, if somebody said, here's the ability on eBay to be able to self-impose deadlines on yourself and stick to them and your life will be much easier.
Oh, boy, I don't know. I mean, I would bid for it, but I wouldn't go up very far in the bid.
You wouldn't overbid for it?
I wouldn't overbid for it. I wouldn't want to overpay. But yeah, it would be worth it. That'd be nice to be able to tap into every once in a while, you know?
So you do, so you try to keep it as close to the actual airing for two reasons. One, what we just talked about, and two, the timeliness, because you never know when something's going to happen.
Yeah, but the timeliness that we got kind of famous for in South Park was a little bit accidental coming out of our stupid schedule. Yeah. It was almost like, oh, well, now we waited this long, we could put that joke in. It was like, that's cool. So we started doing that. And then people started saying, well, that's why they do it that way. And then we said, yeah, that's why we do it that way.
Yeah, sure.
Instead of like, we're lazy procrastinators. it does give us that freedom, but really we don't do that as nearly as much as we even could. Like, we really could do that a lot more. Like, we could do much more timely stuff.
Right.
Very, very easily.
We end up like three times a year, there's something that is right directly in the news, and all of a sudden you guys come in.
Yeah, that's, and you know, and those are the episodes that get us a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. And so, but really, I think our best episodes and the ones that, I don't know, are like our meat and potatoes are the ones that we like the best are always the ones that are just the kids being kids, mm-hmm. and it's quote unquote timeless, or it doesn't really stick to a time too much.
Yeah,
and I think that's more of our episodes, but it's not the ones that really get us the attention, you know?
Well, here's what's interesting. And I can't think of another show that this has happened to, because now it's syndicated, obviously, in Los Angeles. I think it's either 11:30 or midnight. It's always like right as I'm falling asleep. But you can see one of the old episodes, and there's this weird nostalgia that comes out of it because you're like, oh yeah, remember when Britney went crazy?
Yeah.
You know, and then there's your episode, or like, you know, like, oh yeah, Passion of the Christ. I told it, you know, and. I don't know. It's like twice a year you guys hit something that was a huge deal at the moment, but then dies away like everything else. But then it's like you almost like relive it.
It is. And I think that that's something that's kind of syndication and repeats. It's like, wow, that is weird. Like to watch something old and go and also say like, not even with like a, like, oh, you remember when she went crazy or some, but sometimes it's a feeling of like, remember how we all that kind of captured the country for a month or a week or 6 months and how stupid that is.
Yeah.
You know, and how kind of ephemeral that the nature of news and celebrity and just stuff is. Cause I mean, for me, like growing up, like I watched Monty Python.
Yeah.
Flying Circus or some other show, but Flying Circus, I remember everyone, they wouldn't do it very often, but every once in a while they'd stick in a barb about a politician or about the Tories or about something. And you could tell, even though I didn't know what it was that, it meant a lot to a bunch of people. You know what I mean? It meant the same as a Nixon joke to us or something.
Right.
You know what I mean? And just kind of like how trippy that is to watch that stuff and go, wow, it is all, I don't want to say interchangeable, but it is, these fascinations really don't have a lot of, they really are pretty shallow and pretty, you know, they don't really last that. They don't really last that
long. Well, I should have mentioned SNL is like that too, because you see
SNL's
a sketch
great like that.
Like,
yeah.
Oh yeah, Clinton. Remember when we just used to make fun of the fact that he ate a lot?
Yeah. Yeah. Remember how quaint that was?
Yeah. Oh, that's
before
cute.
It got really weird and like, you know, before it really captured our.
And the other thing with the SNL is the music.
Yeah.
And that's what I think when they, you know, that's the great thing about the DVDs, which they've only released the first four seasons, but man. You
see some great stuff.
Just they capture just whatever was going on, and you capture all these people, whether it's the host or the artist, at this point of their career where their life was taking off. It's kind of fascinating.
But also you capture all sorts of artists coming. It's interesting to watch, you know, someone like Jay-Z, and then like further on the disc, watch someone like Jerry Garcia. Like Jerry Garcia had to walk up those same stairs and get on that stage.
Yeah.
And, you know, all these different kind of like artists having to like play on the same stage, go through the same bottleneck.
Or you see the hosts at different points of their career. Because, like, Brittany does her show. Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, right, right.
So she did the show first time. Yeah. Back when...
Her brain worked. Her brain works.
Wow.
She was really a great, young, hot, smart... Wow. What?
She had breasts? What? And then she comes back the next time, and she's, like, 45 pounds. Yeah. Just strung out with the big black eye bags. And they're joking about it in the show. Like, whoa.
Kind of sticks out.
Yeah.
It's like... Gauge are based on SNL appearances.
You guys are kind of merciless with the right kinds of celebrities, in my opinion. But when you run into them, you must run into them in the same circles at some point.
Yeah. I mean, we have. I ran into the last thing that happened to me is I ran into, what the heck's his name? Susan Sarandon and
Tim Robbins.
And Susan Sarandon at this club, right? This my friend's club. And I saw they were sitting at this table. And I was like, why don't you come over and sit with... And I was like, no. And like, I guess we're the two... It was like, whatever this night was like, oh, they're famous. And Matt's kind of sort of famous. So they'll want to sit together.
Because they could talk about famous stuff.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, that's all right. You know, they probably don't want to see me because we kind of ripped on them in Team America.
Yeah.
And Tim Robbins was totally cool. He came over to me and started talking to me and I don't know if you've met him or seen him, but he's a big dude.
He's like 6'6",
right? He's like 6'5", 6'6", and, you know, big strapping guy. And it's funny how immediately I just was like 8 years old. And he just walked up to me and totally, again, couldn't have been nicer or more like willing to engage me on like, hey, man, I didn't like how you did this, but I mean, he couldn't have been nicer, really, honestly.
So does that affect
how you do it?
And I
just instantly turned into like the biggest, I don't know, wimpy, like put my head down. So, hey man, how's it going? Mostly because I think the physical stature, like just kind of, it messed with me psychologically. Like, you know, I just kind of had to go. I was like, oh man, oh God, you know, that's cool. Sorry. Yeah, sorry. You know, you're cool too. You know, I just turned into this little.
You're cool right. fest.
You're cool. And I don't know.
I love what you did.
But he really was nice. He really was nice about it. But also I've had it happen where I think, it's, you know, now after all these years and we've just done so many throwaway jokes that I just don't remember. And I don't care. You know, it's not like we sit around and go, ah, ha, 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 we, you know.
They're whatever. Like little drive-by shootings.
Yeah, they're just little drive-by. We don't care. We don't, you know, I consider it honestly like a fart in the face of somebody. Like, hey, I farted in your face. Okay, whatever. I forget about it. So more often than not, it's like a celebrity will come up and go, hey, you know, they'll be like, you know, hey, Matt, something, something, you know, like, hey, you know. That was funny when you did this. And I'm like, why are they talking to me? Why are they fascinated with me? And then I'll realize that like, oh, we did a whole show about them. And they were actually being nice and trying to like come up and say,
be cool about it.
But I don't remember it. And so then I come off like a double, like I ripped on you and then I don't even remember it, which is actually pretty much the truth. Like I just, yeah. I mean, it's like, we don't really spend that much time. We spend a lot of time on the show and we spend a lot of, you know, time on the jokes and trying to make it right. But we don't spend a really enormous amount of time picking who it is or like there's some kind of like secret formula about how we.
Or thinking about the show after the fact, right?
We just don't think about it.
That's it.
We
move on.
We don't think about it that much. Yeah. We move on. You know, we always consider like, oh, we did our South Park about that. Now we never ever have to, we did it. Yeah. We did our Scientology episode. Now we never ever have to talk about it again. Or we did our Britney, you know, episode. We're done with that.
Well, you guys did the Mel Gibson episode before he had his famous Malibu
went
meltdown,
into his
right?
death spiral. I'm fascinated by Mel Gibson. I mean, is there any more fascinating person in the world? I think he's just up there.
I've been to, you know, Moonshadows, the bar that he left.
Yeah.
So we've gone to that bar. That's one of the coolest places, I think, to eat lunch in all of L.A. And every time I go there, I'm like so excited that that's where Mel... I feel like it's like this seminal moment.
Try to find the tequila bottles that he was pictured in front of. Like, there's the tequila.
Seriously.
I'm shooting out of there.
Well, I say to my wife, like, why don't they sell t-shirts? Like, what would be the big deal? Like, just to picture his mugshot on a Moonshadows t-shirt. Like, you think they'd...
Well, they might lose his business and he might, you know...
Oh, that's true.
How many shots of tequila? 6,000 shots of tequila a month.
It's probably worth 10,000 a year to them.
Yeah, that's probably big money.
But when you're actually there and you see, all right, here's this random bar that's on the Pacific Coast Highway, which is a very dangerous highway to drive drunk on at night.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, you pull left, you're just causing a 20-car pileup. It's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, that was really a fun, having Mel Gibson give that gift of really going public with his anti-Semitism after the country had had a huge, about 6-month debate on The Passion, which was like, is it anti-Semitic or is it not? And you know, kind of, and you had to really had to kind of stake your ground.
You were in it. I mean, you were heavily involved in that debate.
Yeah. And we were like, we kind of talked about it a bunch of Dell's research and we're like, yes, he's anti-Semitic, but more than anything, I think he's just a loon. So that's kind of where we came down on it. And then to have, and then people were like, I mean, people were on the radio and TV going, look, this is, you know, you shouldn't call this guy anti-Jew. I mean, he just made a pro-Jesus film. And blah, and then it's like 6 months later, he just let everyone just like, here you go.
But you resisted the urge. You resisted the urge to do a follow-up episode.
That's what I'm saying, because it's like we did it. You know, like people have been asking us to do a Michael Jackson episode now that he's dead. And it's like, well, we kind of did our Michael Jackson. We did, you know, we did it. And so it's hard to go back and do it again, you know.
And when Cruz, I think you did your Scientology thing with Cruz before the Oprah couch, right? Or was it?
Boy, I don't remember.
I remember before he got dropped by Paramount and all that stuff. I think you were way ahead of that.
I can't remember. Well, it was before Mission Impossible 3. It was right around the same time. I think it was just before that.
I think you beat the couch, though.
I think we did.
You were ahead of the couch.
I can't remember. The couch was great, too, though. It's the same thing.
So is that like a feud with Tom Cruise?
No.
Like if you saw him, would it be awkward?
I think it would be awkward.
For you, probably.
For me, yeah. I don't think
for him, you'd be like,
he's phased at all.
What's up, man?
Into my orbit now. I will destroy you. Yeah, I don't really frequent the places that Tom Cruise does, luckily, so that hasn't happened.
Yeah, I don't even know what those places are. And I hope I never find
those
out.
Those planets that he frequents, I don't frequent.
You guys were like the only people, I mean, it's really a short list that just said, screw it. We're going after Scientology. We're going to do it. We're going to go down that road.
Yeah, and this is where actually, yes, because this is where doing the show as quickly as we did, it helped. Mm-hmm. If that show would have sat on the shelf, the way most shows do, where you finish it and it sits on a shelf for 3 months and then it's aired in some kind of prearranged thing, lawyers would have gotten to Viacom before that went on the air.
Ooh.
Like, we do the show so fast that really the only people that see the show, and they don't even see the entire show, they see most of it, is legal and standards at Comedy Central. So we can't say the F word, you know, we can't say certain things.
You can get away with the S word sometimes.
Sometimes. But there's this ongoing negotiation with the standards people at Comedy Central, which, believe it or not, I sometimes hate them, but ours are pretty understanding and pretty cool.
Because you're on cable.
Yeah, because we're on cable. And our lawyer, our current lawyer, the lawyer who said yes to the Scientology episode, I think is great. He's like, nope, that's legal. You're fine. And we're like, are you sure? And he's like, yep. And you need to check with your boss? He goes, nah, it's legal. And then when it went out, of course, it started World War III.
Yeah.
And this poor, I'm sure this lawyer caught all sorts of hell. But it was basically because by the time it got on the air, once it gets on the air, you can't pull it back, especially now, which is what they tried to do, which is what kind of got them in trouble, which was the first repeat of that episode coincided with near the opening of Mission Impossible 3. And so somebody called somebody and somebody called somebody and we got the call that was like, we're going to pull that episode because somebody, a producer, quote unquote, on Mission Impossible 3 doesn't want it to air. And me and Trey's attitude was, well, you can't expect us to be quiet about this. And they're like, yes, we can. Do you like your job? And we basically were like, we got off the phone and we're just sitting there for like a day or two, just pissed off and kind of like having our bell rung. I'm like, dude, they just pulled our show. And then
the ultimate violation.
It did, but they pulled it the day before it went on the air. You can't do that anymore. So as soon as they did that, the internet blew up. People realized what had happened, and all of a sudden the calls. We didn't have to. What I'm saying is, we didn't have to do anything.
Right.
You know, and 10 or 15 years ago, that probably would have just, you know, happened, and you know, no one would have looked back. But now you can't do that anymore. The internet kind of screwed Scientology much more than me or Trey ever could. You know.
Well, I can neither confirm nor deny that I have personal experience with this issue, but let's say I did. If something gets in a column and then gets removed, people are going to notice.
Right.
So the battle is actually getting it in the column.
If it was posted for 2 hours.
Yeah. You want it to get in, and then it's like, it's leave it in, because it's going to be a bigger deal if it comes out, because then it's like neon signs, something came out.
Right.
Versus just keeping it up. And,
right.
But I
it
mean,
makes
you guys,
it look even worse. That happened to us. One time we did another thing with Scientology that we did for the MTV Movie Awards. And it showed at the live thing in front of 4,000 people, right? And it was this thing where Cartman wipes his ass with Dianetics. It was stupid. It was like 5 or 6 years ago. And So it showed in front of 4,000 people, but they were going to cut that and was going to air 3 days later or whatever. So they showed on a Saturday in Hollywood. And then on Monday, my phone started ringing because Isaac Hayes, this was when he was still alive and he was a Scientologist. He gave my number to somebody at Scientology, right? And so I talked to this lady at Scientology and she said, hi, we heard about the thing. It was showing empty movie awards. I said, yeah, it was just a little joke. You know, it was just all fun. You know, South Park, we're just like that. So, and I only took this call, by the way, because of Isaac, because I kind of had to because of him. And she goes, well, we'd like to see it. And it was supposed to air the next night. She's like, can we just see it, you know, so we know what to prepare for? I said, sure, I don't see why not. She goes, could you send us over a copy? I said, sure, I'll send you over a copy. And that was like at 9 a.m. or something. And what she assumed was I was going to messenger over a copy because we're only about a couple of miles apart here in L.A.
Yeah.
And so she called back. She goes, we never got that tape. But in the afternoon, I said, oh, no, I stuck it. I sent it to you. And she goes, we haven't got it yet. I said, well, I stuck it in the mail. And she's like, well, you know, and so I just basically, and she goes, well, could I send someone over right now and get another copy? I said, that was our last copy. And I put it in the mail. Yeah. So I guess we'll get it on Thursday. And so that was,
and she said, I need to see it now.
And so that's what I'm saying. Like, if they could have got a copy, that probably wouldn't have aired. But the fact that they couldn't get it beforehand and it had gone out and 4,000 people had seen it, it's hard to unring that bell.
When did you guys develop the FU power at Comedy Central where you're just, they're like,
I don't know.
Let's leave it alone. Leave them alone on this one.
Pretty quickly, because like the show got really popular really, really fast.
Right.
You know, and Comedy Central, when we first started, was only seen in like 30 million homes, something like that, and wasn't even seen in Colorado. Like, so all of our friends in Colorado couldn't see our show. So people started protesting and stuff, and then I think they went up to 80 million homes. Not all of it based on South Park, but a lot. You know, a lot of the adding of subscriptions. And after that happened, they were pretty much like, whatever you guys want to do, that just go ahead and just make it funny, please.
You guys, I can tell you from firsthand experience, you crushed the stoner demographic. Because that was a little pre-internet. Pre-internet, not... I mean, the internet was
the stoner
there.
Demographic was greatly underserved.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I mean, email was there. I had just started my own website because you guys were summer 97. So I had started like 4 months before. But people still like... People didn't know how to surf for stuff. And so there's a lot of like sitting around and DVDs had just kind of started, but maybe like one out of three guys had a DVD player.
Right.
So a lot of people had cassettes but man, those South Park reruns when they would start showing them over and over again, or they do the little mini marathon or something. Wheelhouse. It was good.
Bring up the bong.
11:30 to 2? Oh!
Know what I'm doing. Bar, women.
You can at least tape them.
No, I'm going to stay here.
But then, you know, you guys have been on really for the entire duration of the internet. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Like, in 1997, you couldn't have imagined that.
Well, that's
what
we can't stop. You know, we don't want the internet to stop.
Well, but at the same time, you got YouTube. Basically, your stuff's on YouTube. You don't get paid for it. You started your own website, South Park
right.
Studios.
Yeah, yeah.
But the stuff's still on YouTube.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a pain in the ass.
Well, it's a pain in the ass, but it's pretty awesome, too. You know, like, I mean, you just
so
want
to... So you're a fan of it, not threatened by it.
I can see there's a little bit of both. I mean, as an artist, you're not threatened by it at all. It's awesome. Anytime anybody sees your stuff, you're psyched.
Right.
But, you know, financially, there's a big problem with the whole thing, you know. And it's not just, like, rich artists getting paid. It's an entire industry... An entire town, really, L.A. If you just take L.A., it's an entire town of people getting paid, you know? But
it's like music, Napster, 10 years ago, whenever that was. Now.
Yeah, it's going to change things, but it isn't just like, oh, this rich guy wants his money. It's like there's a whole infrastructure of unions and, you know, gaffers and grips and people who shoot and people who write, and all those people need to get paid, you know? And they get paid because there's an enormous amount of money paid in advertising on TV. And then none on YouTube. So, nobody ever makes any money. There will be a problem.
Well, it's unclear how YouTube makes money. Nobody's ever been able to fully explain that one to
me. Well, they're not concerned about making money, which is really, I think, you know, there's a good case to be made that they're really, I use YouTube every day. I love it. I'm a person who lives in 2009.
Me too.
YouTube's a huge part of my life.
Love it too.
But there's an argument that it's stifling innovation on a business level because people don't really have to figure out how to make money. Yet, because Google just pays for it all. They're just paying the world streaming costs right now, essentially subsidizing, which is great for all of us, but it's not really, we're not getting to that next level, I don't think, quickly enough.
it's,
you know, where you can put stuff on the internet and get paid, and like you can put original stuff on the internet, and it's like people who, you know, like a Will Ferrell, instead of just dabbling in Funny or Die, make stuff for the internet that's like has the full artistic freedom of it and can get paid the kind of money he deserves. I'm like, why would Will Ferrell spend 1 minute on the internet? He gets paid zillions and zillions of dollars per minute of movie he does. Like, why would he go spend it? You know, it's like, but you want people to feel like they can make, you know, a living on it. So
what's weird that newspapers, magazines are fighting the same battle. It's different content, but
yeah.
All right. Well, we're not making enough money out of this, and we have all these various ways that people are either reading our content or getting the clicks from it, sending whatever link right. to our content, and we don't get paid, and something's wrong, but we have no idea how to fix it, and we don't know if we should get paid, go to a pay site, or, you know, and I think the same thing to some degree is the case with video.
Yeah.
Like, you guys could do a pay site and probably make money on it, but if your stuff's still on YouTube and all these other places, then you're not going to make money on it.
Right. Yeah, we'd make any money on it. I don't know. It's like every time there's so many different, I don't know. It's every time I think about it, it kind of turns over my head and I'm like, oh yeah.
Yeah, it hurts my head.
It actually hurts your head.
My ear bleed once.
It actually hurts your head. I just know that if I do this for Comedy Central, they give me money and I go buy stuff.
Yeah.
And that works for me. You know what I mean? And like somehow I'm lucky enough and blessed enough to get in that position. So that's great, but it's totally different than the way, I mean, really, honestly, like I'm 38.
Yeah.
Trey's a year older than me, and we might as well be 80 years old talking about this stuff. Even though you could say, well, we're right in it and doing all this stuff, like compared to the way we started when we were starting off,
yeah.
you know, at age 23, 15 years ago, no internet. Like you had to, you know what I mean? Like we had to go to Sundance and
make your own breaks. Yeah.
It's like totally, it's a different way of making your own breaks now, but I have no idea it doesn't apply to us anymore.
You know? Think about if you guys were 23 now.
You start a website.
You'd start a website.
Doing web shorts.
Yeah.
Totally different way
of doing
it.
But you'd be one of 700,000 million people doing the same thing.
Doing it. We would have stayed in Colorado and been like called ColoradoFunnyGuy.com or whatever.
Funny guys.
two funny guys from Colorado.com. Have you heard about these guys?
They're funny and they're from Colorado. Well, tell everybody how, the people who don't know, how you guys started out. You were college friends.
Oh, yeah. We were. The legend, we were in college class together. I took filmmaking to like just satisfy some requirement. And Trey was in the same class and we met, and then we did a movie called Alfred Packer the Musical, but we renamed it for its release, and now it's called Cannibal the Musical, mm-hmm. distributed by Troma. Then we came out to LA and did the whole sleeping on couches thing, just like pretty much like the story of like sleeping on couches.
What year was this? Like 94?
94, yeah, 95.
OJ.
96. Yeah, I watched the entire OJ trial. The
I
entire
did too.
Things. I was totally jobless, sat in my friend's apartment and smoked cigarettes and ate one big burrito a day. This like $3 burrito. I watched most of the OJ trial. I could have been one of those like on court TV or whatever.
Me too.
I could have talked about it at a certain point. I knew everything about it.
I remember realizing at one point that I was probably in the top 0.001% of people who knew the most about this trial.
Yeah.
And I was like, it serves me in no way.
It was a huge part of my life. It's like, these are the people I hung out with all day, every day, you know, Marsha and the Judge Ito. And I talked about it all. And I'd go out at night with my friends, and that's what I wanted to talk about. Cause I really had nothing else to talk about, you know, but I hit that. Yeah. OJ trial hit my sweet spot of like, what am I doing with my life? I'm sitting around drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes. I'm 4 or 5 years old. What the hell am I doing with my life?
Did you ever cross that line where you spent so much time in the trial that it became like in prison, where you start thinking the prison guard's hot because you can't see any other women? I felt that way about Marsha Clark.
Yeah, Marsha Clark.
By like October, you know, I was like, you
I
know,
do like her hair like that way.
It's interesting.
She's thin, kind of.
Seems like she'd be kind of a tiger. There was no other woman. It was like the womanless trial other than the commentators.
Yeah, exactly. It was like,
they'd bring out like Leslie Abramson every once in a while. Like, oh, Leslie.
So then we came out so I watched the whole OJ trial, and then we did the short called Spirit of Christmas that we did for a friend, and that was really the thing that took off. But before Spirit of Christmas kind of took off, we were doing other stuff. So in the meantime, we had slept on all those couches and raised like $900,000 to do a movie called Orgasmo,
mm-hmm.
Which is like, you know, small, stupid movie, funny. Then we got offered out of the blue. Trey had a meeting with the Zuckers, with David Zucker, and he off like, and then we he was like, Trey's like, they want help with the script they're doing. And then all of a sudden it's like, we're just funny in the room. And they offered us the leads in basketball.
Let's go with the kids.
And so we're like, yeah. And so we're like, and it was like, what, you know, like, again, like going from like watching the OJ trial to like, the Zuckers want us to do their next move. The Zuckers are like, you know,
yeah,
they're,
people
they're gods,
the Zuckers, yeah.
You know, and like for us, they're like complete gods and still are.
Airplane, Naked Gun. Yeah. Were they doing Scary Movie at that point?
No. Yeah. That was way before. So like even Top Secret had come out that time.
Kentucky Fried Movie.
Kentucky Fried Movie
was a great one.
Like some of the best movies ever, you know. I think they'd done the Naked Guns, one of them. So we were like, hell yeah, we'll do that. And so we didn't, you know, David Zucker directed it, and we this movie baseball, and he did it. We took it so. What's remarkable about the time is we now looking back is how unseriously we took it, you know, which is like, okay, how could you take baseball seriously anyway?
Yeah.
But really even unserious, even on, based on that. And like, I had really only acted in little stuff that we had done. It was like, all of a sudden I had a trailer and I'm an actor.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and Trey, by the way, Trey is a really pretty good actor. Trey did theater growing up, and Trey's a natural, like, and I'm not saying any South Park fan or anybody follows our career, but see, oh, Trey's a, has a real natural ability for acting. Even for him, it was a big step.
Yeah.
For me, it was ridiculous. It was just ridiculous that I was in this situation. So the first day of shooting, and we got our friend Dean to be Little Bitch in the movie. That was just our friend. We're like, we want Dean to be in it. And it was just, so there was a comfort level for me.
It was your one star demand.
I don't think we had any. I think we know how to, we thought we didn't, you know, we didn't even know you could do that.
Yeah.
I was just like, wow, we're having lobster on Friday. Like it was like that. I was like, every day was Thanksgiving. I ate like three entrees a day. It was, I couldn't believe how good the food was. But anyway, we got, Little Bitch, Dean, to be our friend. So there was this good comfort level because I was just like, okay, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but Trey's there, Dean's there, just like old times back in Colorado, I'll be okay. So the very first day of shooting on this huge movie, well, huge by our standards, was it rained in LA, which it never rains. And we went to the rain set, which was the only scene in the movie that I'm in that Trey and Dean aren't in. And it's a scene where like I go and I have to go talk to Robert Evans, but not Robert Evans, what the hell's name? Robert, I can't remember the guy's name.
Robert Evans was kid not that Rob, stays
yeah,
in the
not
picture.
Robert Evans.
She was the greatest kiss
I'm forgetting
ass
the guy's
I've
name.
Seen.
Yeah. what the hell's the guy's name? Anyway, the main bad guy in the movie. And it's me, and I have, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is in the scene. The real Kareem. It's like the stupid scene where I go into a sports museum and they're all sitting there.
Right.
So I had this, so the very first shot of this very big movie was me and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And it was just the most, like, disconcerting experience.
Well, especially because he's tall.
Kind of a too. I mean, he was a little bit of
Can't believe that.
He's
such a great guy.
Believe it or not. To me, Matt from Colorado, he wasn't really awesome and nice right up the day. It was raining.
He was probably like, who is this?
Yeah, and now it's like, you and Hader, and it's like basketball's become like, I had somebody bring up basketball this morning to me at breakfast at this diner. Weren't you on that movie Basketball? It's like, yes, I sure was. Like,
it's gained steam.
So Bill, like, me and Bill Hader at this thing, we're like, we were outside and it was some function where people are asking for his autograph and maybe a few here asking for my autograph, and some guy comes up and he goes, hey, this fan, trying to be funny. He goes, you owe me $8. That's what for? He goes, I want my money back for basketball, like joking. And I was like, yeah, that's funny. Yeah, okay, that's funny. Yeah, it sucks and stuff. And Hader got right in this guy's face. He's like, hey, man, Basketball is a sweet movie, and I don't want to hear anything. And he said to Bill, Bill has arguments with me and Trey about why Basketball is a sweet movie. And we're like, no, it's not a sweet movie. It's just, you know, it's a really.
I think I had that same argument with you. I think it's underrated.
Although we did, I told you we did come up with Basketball 2. Did you guys talk about that? You and Bill?
No,
and
but
thing?
I don't think we kind of glossed over it. You should talk about it.
We do want to, Trey and I have been talking about doing Basketball 2.
But not actually doing it.
We've been talking about just putting a bunch of money together and just shooting a sweet trailer that looks like a Michael Bay movie. And the whole thing is it starts in a Casbah, in Morocco or some nondescript Arab country. And there's all this stuff. And then there's chickens and all this stuff moving through the main bazaar. But then, you know, you look under there. I think some movies started this way. You look under the blanket and there's a nuclear bomb. You know what I mean? And then it goes past and then you rack focus to me and I'm playing chess with like a little fake turban thing on or something like that, drinking tea. And all of a sudden it's like, I start running down, you know, we just do this huge, huge intro to a massive movie. And then you just keep cutting to like, it's just, it's just like foreign intrigue, you know, times five, and it's, and it has nothing to do with basketball at all, except for Dean's in it, Trey's in it, I'm in it. Basketball, you know, really, we just want to do the trailer and have it like pay for it to be in movie theaters.
I love it.
You've waited,
you've
waited 20 years. And here it is. Finally.
Well, you said you wanted, if it was 20 years, you could do like a weird, you know how they do like the anniversary, like 2-0. Basketball 2-0 or whatever they do with the
2-0. Basketball.
Yeah. And you had the random shots of like people in a spaceship for no reason.
People in spaceship.
What's going on in this movie?
Dean crying, Trey hugging him with an explosion going off as he's hugging him and they're guarding him from an explosion. Like, what the
civil rights rally?
Yeah, just what the hell is this? Basketball.
I love that. I love that idea. I mean, if you're just going to recklessly spend your money just for your own enjoyment, I love that idea, and I think you should buy the Grizzlies. A case that I made in my MBA book. Which you responded to, you need a steep discount, but...
Yeah, we need a very steep discount.
You also, you made the point, I don't want to give away the footnote, because it's your own special footnote, but you made the point that it would be bad for your wallets, because you guys would get suspended and fined a lot.
Yeah, we would. I you know, the way Cuban is, I think we'd be at least that bad, if not worse.
Where would you sit? Would you be mid court side, or would you be behind the basket, or would you be in the stance?
I think I'd be up in the stands. I met Mark Cuban this summer, and I was really surprised at how tall he was.
Yeah, he's like 6'2", 6'3", right?
Yeah, but I always see him on TV next to all those huge basketball players, and I thought he was a little shrimp. So, like, I want to be away from the big basketball players, because I'm 6'2".
You know, so maybe mid-court's
good. Like, shrimp.
Like Donald Sterling sits at mid-court. Or this,
yeah.
He's got Donald, his ladies next to him.
Donald Sterling, that's who we're going to emulate. We're going to follow Donald.
Dress like him. We're like the dark suit jackets.
Dark suit jackets and spend no money.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, nobody's made more money than him.
He's the guy.
Yeah, the irony of Donald Sterling, cheap guy, terrible owner.
But he makes all the money.
He is he bought the team for $12 million and could probably sell it for $500 million. And he makes a profit every year. Like, teams lose $30 million, $40 million. He always makes $12, $15, $20
million. Oh, I asked you this one time. There's no way for the rest of the owners to get together and kind of vote him off the island.
Nah.
That's just so bad. It's really so bad for the league.
It's really weird. It's that the owners are very protected once they
get a team.
The whole thing is the vote. If you get past the vote, you own the team. It's like owning a house. You can do whatever to your house after you buy the house.
Once you get the team,
yeah. It's like if you buy a house in a neighborhood where, like, an HPOZ protect the neighborhood,
right,
and they can vote on whether they want you to have the house, but you get it. That's it. You can freaking paint it purple.
You can do whatever you want. I'm gonna paint this house whatever color I want.
Maybe put all glass around it, do weird stuff. Yeah, it's too bad.
It really is too bad, because it's like you just have these teams that are just dead weight.
We should have planned this ahead of time. We should have said that you and Trey want to buy an NBA team, and
that'd
you've been
great.
Seriously looking, and that could have been a news story, and then you guys could have, nah, I'm just kidding.
See, I would buy an NBA team. Trey likes NFL, but I think those are more expensive. Trey's a big football fan. I don't think he would
buy basketball. That's a weird part of you guys, that you're both, you have your sports that you like, but you don't like the other sport? Like, Trey won't watch NBA at all, and you barely watch NFL?
Trey just really, really likes football. He's just a big football fan. And I just, in the last couple of years, have just fallen out of love with football for, I don't know why. Maybe I'm turning into a sissy or something. I don't know. I just kind of fell out of love with football. But I watched a Giants-Cowboys game last night, and it was pretty good.
Did you realize that it was a new stadium?
I did. Well, that's why I watched, for the stadium, you know. A big architecture guy.
They mentioned it every 2 seconds.
Ooh, there's going to be a new stadium on.
New stadium. Look at that scoreboard.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, the trade have for some reason, we have kind of ongoing argument about football, but it's not something you can argue. You know, it's just not something you can logically dissect of different sports of why they're better. You could, because you know a lot about sports. I probably couldn't. I'm not going to be on ESPN ragging on football. Let's just say it that way. I like to argue about, like, why I really don't like football. But if I go overseas and someone rips on American football,
you get protected.
Oh yeah, I'm down. No, well, yeah, totally. I'll back American football. Anything American, if I'm not in this country or I'm talking to a foreign, I'll back 100%. Even though really I kind of like soccer better than football sometimes when I'm here. If I'm overseas, I'll never admit to that. I'll back us. You know what I mean?
I think what happens to people as they get older is they have less time to really follow the sports properly. So you end up picking and choosing whatever sport. And usually you'll settle on one and maybe two. Like, some people love baseball and they just throw themselves into baseball and they don't care.
And if you can't follow the drama and the personal stories, you really do fall out of interest of something.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, yeah, I just don't have time for
I did that.
I'm not really doing anything better with my time. I'm playing video games and like, riding my bike. So it's not like I'm doing something awesome. I've got something better to do on my Sundays.
Internet porn.
Yeah, cook omelets with my wife and, internet porn.
Yeah, I did, I kind of cut out the National League about 6 years ago.
Just decided I have to make choices in life.
I was like,
you have kids now.
I cut college football like 10, 12, 13 years ago.
Yeah.
Just because it was like Saturdays and Sundays. Like,
yeah, right.
I want to watch football all day on Sunday. Like I went 11 hours every Sunday. And to do Saturday as well when I don't have a team, like yeah. I didn't go to like, you know, Texas.
Or, right.
If I went to Texas, I would love college football.
See, I don't like college athletics, really, college football or basketball, just because I don't like college. I didn't like, I don't like school. Yeah. I still have that. I don't like school. I never was into school. I went to college. I didn't like college. If there's anything I hate, it's school spirit. And so that encapsulated in sports is like, no, man, I can't handle that. Like looking at the stands when they cut to the stands in a Philadelphia Eagles game or I'm like, oh, cool. Like there's some cool, like I love watching football fans and like the fans, college, you know, like I'm just like, burning all sorts of bridges. That's our main demographic. Is like college. But looking at a bunch of kids, like, you know, cheering just in college stuff, just bums me out.
You think it's like too cult-like?
I just don't like college. It's just like, yeah, it's not even.
So when you were in there,
it's not even good like a cult, you know, and it's not even like badass like a cult. It's not even like scary or creepy. Like
you didn't
a
get
cult.
Multiple wives.
Yeah, it's just like, what? Like, really? Like, you know, college? I didn't like it when I was in college.
So you were one of those guys, the guy who was in the room like, oh, dude, you're going to your football game.
Oh, yeah.
Have a good time at your football game.
Yeah, completely annoying.
Yeah.
Kind of a hippie, but not really. And just kind of like, just didn't want to like commit myself to anything. So I lived like a few blocks from the football stadium. And this was the year that CU won the national championship. I was there. It was like 92. Does that sound right? Something like that?
Yeah.
Like it was the biggest thing in the world. And I was two blocks away with my friend smoking weed and being like, I'm not doing that. I'm doing cool things.
What is it about Colorado where, like, you know,
I'm not doing that. That's stupid. I'm doing cool stuff.
I went to high school back east.
Yeah.
And it's like there was that one or two guys in each class is like, going to Colorado, dude. Like, just for some reason, like, not a huge student, like, maybe like a skier. Or back then, they didn't have snowboarding, but now it'd be a snowboarder and like, it's kind of mellow, maybe grew the hair out a little counterculture even in high school.
Yep.
And they go out there and they're never seen again.
Yeah.
Colorado just takes
swallows them up.
Yeah.
It's
they don't even come back for like breaks.
No, it's a really, really nice place. You know, once you get there, it's a cool place to
be. But it seems like it's for a certain type of person.
Yeah. I mean, we're from Colorado. So those kind of people annoyed me when I first got there. There was like the East Coast. They always had a lot of money. They're like, you're like, hey, you know, did you do your homework? It's like, no, man, I'm going snowboarding today. Like, you know, snowboarding's really expensive.
Yeah.
They could afford to do all that. But I kind of am that guy. I mean, I have to admit that like, you know, I kind of have this bit of Colorado in me that I don't want to, but also just can't shake. Like, I really think North Face is sweet. Like, I love North Face stuff. Like when I see the North Face logo, it makes me happy. My wife again listens. It's like I'll buy anything North. If I could just wear North Face all the time, I would. I just like it. Everything I have North Face, I really love. Like North Face, all that mountain gear, all that crap, I love it.
I
want to dress in all that. I like the way it looks.
Yeah.
I like being ready for rain or shine. You know, and like when I'm in New York or LA, people are just like, dude, why are you dressed like that? I'm like, man, this is cool. This isn't cool. They're like, no, that's not cool. North Face and cool.
It was my favorite book signing in 2005, the Denver one.
Why?
Like 400 people, and probably 380 of them were various degrees of either stoned or guy. There was just like a cool mellow vibe to the whole thing. Like
it's a truly mellow
dude,
place.
Man, I really liked your book. It was cool. Thanks for everything you do. I loved it. When we were doing the book tour for this time, I was like. They're like, all right, what's the first round of the cities you want to do? I was like, Denver.
It's fun, right?
Yeah, I loved it.
Tevas and microbrew.
It was also the best All-Star game NBA weekend I've ever been to.
You said that. Yeah.
Because it was compact. You want, when you have a sporting event in a city, you don't want driving.
Right.
You want things to be near each other. You don't want to be like, well, I'm here and the party's there. Or,
well, the
I'm
lower
here
downtown is right
there
next to the stadium.
It was
so
perfect.
Right there.
And it's got like the little touristy downtown part with like the little trolley and all the stores.
Yeah,
The people were cool. I just loved it.
A lot of microbrews.
Yeah.
What do you want? Bunch of Fat Tire, bunch of Tevas.
Denver's cool. I can see. Although I think Cruz knocked it down a little when he bought a house there.
Yeah, we bought it in Telluride. Yeah.
Does that count or is that too different?
Kind of, but Telluride and Aspen don't really count. You know, like,
they don't?
No, Aspen's not really part of Colorado. You know what I mean? It's like a little piece of California in the middle of Colorado.
What about the sports scene?
In Colorado?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I haven't lived there in a long time, but like growing up, it was definitely like Denver, Broncos.
Broncos.
Just like Broncos. It was everything. We didn't even have a, pro, baseball or hockey team. So we just had the Nuggets and the Broncos.
But now it's like, do you think the other sports are the equals or it's still Broncos?
No, it's still Broncos.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just Broncos. And it would be like that kind of thing where like, on Monday, if the Broncos lost, everyone would be kind of pissed off in town. And the teachers would be kind of mean and everything would just kind of suck.
Yeah.
And for some reason, if people won on, if the Broncos won on Sunday, Monday was a great day. It just really was. Like, I remember that association,
yeah.
You know, from a very young age, from being 5 and 6 and 7 years old. Like, the Broncos won and then Monday would be fun. You know,
that's what I miss
nice.
About Boston is the mood was just completely tied to, if there was some sort of dramatic high or low with the sports, like if we had gotten swept by the Yankees, you'd go around Monday and like even the guy pouring your coffee was pissed off.
Pissed off, yeah, and just do a bad job
here.
Doing
it. Take it,
damn Yankees.
But here, it's obviously LA is just not like that at all, and there's no correlation with sports or anything. I think probably LA gets a little bit of a bad rap just because there's so many transplants.
Yeah,
that I don't think people factor that in.
That's why I kind of like LA. You know, that part of LA, and it is. Is cool is like no one really takes ownership of this place. So I've lived here for 15 years.
Yeah.
I don't know who the mayor is. I don't care. I don't want to know anything. I don't go. I don't vote. I don't care about the city council. I don't know my Congress. Like every, but I don't think I'm weird. I think anybody, everyone, even if you've lived here, if you've lived here for 15 years, you're always like, I'm about to move. I just came through. I was going to, you know, do my thing and I'm getting out. I'm not from here. You know, I'm from Colorado or I'm from whatever, you know,
yeah, there's a feeling that you're on vacation. Or that it's a stop, but you're eventually going to land somewhere else. I've been here 7 years in November. And when you think about how long 7 years is,
yeah,
it's kind of staggering.
Yeah.
And it's like, I guess I live here now. Like my kids have never lived anywhere else. And
but
I still
don't
feel like
something
it though.
But Boston probably like.
I still feel like I'm from Boston.
And you still care about, they're going to pave that street over? Or, you know, something
totally.
Kind of civic thing that like, my city's going to, they're going to do that? That's interesting. And you have a strong opinion about it. Or in Denver, I still do. I'm like, really? They're going to widen I-25? Well, and then I want to talk about it. In LA, I'm like, I don't care. I don't give a shit if they do. You know what I mean? It's like, they're going to do what, the 405? I don't care. I don't live here. But I do live here.
Yeah. For some reason, the only thing I care about is them getting a football stadium.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
I did a whole podcast last week with Casey Westerman about it, about like, you know, it's not just the football, but the concerts. Like, it's just perplexing to me that if U2 wants to play here,
that's kind of not
they
a good
have
place
to like play like, hey, all right, well, I guess we'll do Dodger Stadium.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like, yeah, this is not. I want to play a concert at Dodger Stadium. Like, we should have a real concert with suites and floor seats and, it should be done correctly.
Yeah.
Big Jumbotron.
Yeah, it should be really, really good.
Bothers me.
Yeah, it should
second
be
second biggest city.
Yeah. No, it does a real, that's what I like about it, but I don't know why it doesn't really make a good city. That no one cares about it who lives here.
This is a good segue. In LA, the big thing 2 years ago was the writer's strike.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You guys,
we did a writer's strike thing. Yeah, that's right.
Did. And really I was so happy because I hated the writer's strike from the get go.
Yeah, me too.
I'm not claiming to be Mr. Internet, but I just felt like there was this kind of uneducated feel to the whole thing. Like, it's the internet. There's money. We need some of that money. And it's like, nah, actually, there's really not money yet. Like, I don't know if this wants to be the battle. This isn't the time to fight this battle.
It wasn't the time.
And it seemed to me, there's a lot of things amazing about it, but the most amazing thing to me was that it wasn't like a big time writer who was in charge of the union.
Mm-mm.
It would be like the equivalent of like if the NBA players union, they're going on strike and the guy leading it was Luke Walton.
Yeah.
We got a strike, fellas. Or maybe Luke Walton's too good. I mean, maybe DJ Mbenga.
Yeah, I don't think Luke Walton is like a...
Yeah, he actually plays. DJ Mbenga is your NBA players union head.
Just some... Yeah, there was two things striking about. One was before the strike, when people were like... I think there's a lot of... There was a lot of radical chic kind of allure to the strike for a lot of writers who just like... Living these kind of cush suburban lives, you know, like by the way, that's what I do. Like, I'm not claiming any superiority there. But basically have a pretty good life. And it's like, almost want the man to screw them over so they can get, like, there was this feeling of like, yeah, we can strike. Yeah. And it became this kind of, because I saw it with several writers, that I knew. I was like, what, really? You want to go to the strike? Like, yeah, strike. You know, like it was this fun and it was going to last a couple days and was going to be like this cool, like vacation where you're going to come back and have a little, you know, time off. And then when you come back, you're going to get more money.
Yeah.
You know, so it's one is I think there was that. And once you saw immediately within a week of that thing not getting resolved, they were like, oh, I don't know if we did the right thing. So there was this kind of like mass hysteria about like, let's get the strike voted on. They all met down the convention center. Everyone got drunk and they got them and whipped them into a frenzy and they all voted for it. And, you know, then the idea that you would fight for when they got down to it, it's like you're fighting for money in what, 2017? Like, what about the money right now? You know, and they traded this. This is what we did the episode about, these theoretical dollars for money right now.
Yeah.
And that's probably my like first lesson somebody taught me a long time in Hollywood was like, if you can get the check, get it and put it in your bank. And until you have the check in your bank, don't fight too hard for the other stuff.
Yeah.
Like fight for the get in your bank right now. And other than that, you know, and I think they fought the wrong fight. I think they also fought like a pro-union fight. So it got on it instead of being about the money, it became about this kind of like the power of unions, and unions are an important concept. And it's like, that's fine, but that doesn't matter right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the leaders of it became like, what was the guy's name? The guy who was
Patrick Verone.
Yeah, Patrick Verone. And, but also they got another guy who was like a union guy.
Bowman?
Yeah, Bowman. I think that's what it was. These guys like ruined the town.
Yeah.
I mean, they ruined the town for a year. They screwed up everyone.
Well, now
life.
They can do the thing of, well, we didn't know about the economy. We didn't know the economist turned. It's like, yeah, but you asked people to walk away from 6 months of salaries and you gave Hollywood a chance to basically reconfigure
of course.
The entire system
around you.
Yeah.
And while you're not at the table is essentially like, we're going to reconfigure this system and you're not, oh, you're on strike. Oh, sweet. Now we can do it without you a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, good. Now we can just put reality crap on every day, every hour, every minute.
And then, you know, also like writers are like the Hollywood writers, especially are the ones that and many that I know, not all, but as a group, I think consider themselves smarter than your average person. Definitely not a sheeple that can be led around by leaders that feed them lies and whip them up into a frenzy, like happened to all of us during the Iraq War buildup. Or, you know, they are the ones I'd more like rip on your, you know, the way that the sheeple of America are led by, you know, leaders that sell you a bad deal.
Yeah.
And they fell for it. And they fell for it just as hard as any of us fall for it when you think that, you know, when you're convinced that like your livelihood or you're threatened in your livelihood without really kind of thinking it through, but emotionally you've decided that your livelihood and your family is threatened, then you've got to do whatever you can to protect that. And they went to that level emotionally without ever mentally kind of thinking it through. Just like, you know, what I'm saying is like they're just like human beings, but especially for a group that seems to, because they're writers, they claim to have a handle on human beings a little more than the rest of us. It was just watching that go down was really fascinating and scary, kind of, you know?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and you notice this, and I noticed this, and we've talked about it, but, you know, out here, the Iraq War, Bush, all that stuff, it was so unpopular out here, and L.A. was really one of the first places to really start getting fired up about questioning it, and the writers here, and all that stuff. And then the writer strike, not to compare it to war, but this guy
right.
walking them toward a certain direction, and everybody was like, we got to support him. He's the leader.
Yeah.
We got to do it. We're all in this together. And it's like, well, couldn't you have said the same thing about the war and the president? Like the president's our leader.
Right.
Why didn't you feel that way that time?
Right.
But this time you're like, this guy we elected.
Yeah.
Yeah. So was Bush. So why do it that way once and then do it the other way the other time?
Because they were convinced they were going to get a fat paycheck, you know, probably.
Yeah, but all I had to do was research internet for 5 minutes to realize that.
Research internet. Yeah. And research strikes. There's also like with the strike, after working with comedy, you know, we've worked with now with Comedy Central to get all of our episodes online. So I've seen how the sausage is made, at least right now with the internet.
Yeah.
And there ain't a lot of money there. And by the way, and I love the people we're working with at Comedy Central and they've been great partners in our life and everything else, but like they don't know anything when it comes to the internet. Like it ain't, so when you're striking and you're saying, I want some of your money, Viacom, I want some of your money, CBS, or some of your internet money, there's an implicit assumption of competence that goes along with that, where you are going, well, because CBS, you know what you're doing, and Viacom, you know what you're doing, and these guys don't know what they're doing. Like you're putting you're striking against the wrong guys. These are the guys that have, you know, we'll see if they'll go the way of like the record labels, but they haven't figured it out yet. They're not the geniuses. So you're putting your you know, your bet in with that lot that they haven't really proven themselves, but now you're going on strike and literally giving up your paycheck because you think that CBS, NBC, Viacom are they've already figured out this internet thing, which all you need to do is pick up like any mag. If you don't even use the internet, pick up Time Magazine. They'll tell you that they haven't figured it out. You know, it's like, you're really putting a lot of confidence in people to make a lot of money who haven't shown any ability to do it on the internet. And you seem to say can't do it anyway. You know what I mean? So
there was an insinuation that the companies were holding back.
Yeah, exactly.
That they had figured it out, but.
Yeah.
They were like, let's not tell the writers.
Yeah. That
some money.
They figured out how to make money on video on the internet, which is the holy grail right now. No one can figure it out. Google can't figure it out.
Well, now we're seeing it with the newspapers now. It's like it's one of the dominant stories of 2009 is nobody can translate this into dollars. I don't think the Funny or Die guys have.
No.
Mm-mm. I mean, I think that site's probably worth like $60 million, but I can't even imagine how much money they've spent. I think they think it is,
but yeah. I think I'd sooner buy the Grizzlies.
you get Allen Iverson.
if I get Iverson to run Funny or Die. But what's funny is that like there's good stuff on Funny or Die. This isn't a statement of its worth as comedy or anything like that. It's just like no one can figure it out.
Well, the fundamental problem.
We have, by the way, on our site, we have South Park.
Yeah.
And we can't make any money doing, you know, we're doing it because we want to be on the internet. We're doing it because we want, you know, to be out there. We're doing it because we don't, you know, for whatever reason, the Viacom YouTube lawsuit keeps us from being on YouTube, and YouTube won't pay anything, so it doesn't matter. You know, that doesn't matter anyway.
The fundamental problem is this. There's only three ways to make money from the internet right now that anybody has really figured out. One is gambling.
Right.
One is porn.
Yeah.
And then the other is, like, if you can become a big mainstream website and sell ads.
Yes.
You know? There's no fourth way.
There's no other way right now.
People will pay.
And even porn isn't doing well. Right?
Even porn's not doing well. Mm-hmm. People will pay for information, but it's really going to be only from Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, something that like where they're investing and they need very specialized.
Yeah.
It's just not a proven business model that people will pay for.
It would be interesting to
be entertained.
You see on Cuban's blog, he talked about what if YouTube just stopped? What if Google just stopped paying YouTube? That would be a very interesting. It's a very interesting thought experiment to go through because
I love Cuban because he always twists stuff around and he's always the first one to ask, well, wait a second, how is this a good plan or why is this the case? Like he's constantly seems to be questioning everything. And I think he's had some really interesting ideas about the pay stuff.
In that stuff, in like video news, pay on the internet, I'm always interested to see what he has to say because he's one of the only people who just calls. Things.
Well, did you read his thing on the newspapers? Like, why wouldn't they go to the Amazon model of just you have a sign up that your credit card's attached to? And it is crazy. Like, you buy anything from a newspaper or magazine and you're online for 40 minutes filling out forms.
And don't you find yourself, like, I wanted to buy some headphones the other day, these one kind of headphones, and I went to Amazon first. If they're on Amazon, I'll just buy them from them.
Right.
You know, but because my stuff's already there.
So you can't.
Every time you read a newspaper article, you don't want to put in all your junk, you know, all your credit card numbers and everything. But there's a way to do it where, you know, maybe that would get docked. You know.
So do you sell ads on South Park Studios?
Yeah. Comedy Central sells ads on there.
And you own it with them.
We own it with them. And by the way, we basically break even. It pays for itself, which is cool. And that way people can see our show. But. You know, I think I think very soon in the future, there's going to be real money to be made for us or for whoever can figure it out and do it right. You know,
it seems like, playing the one commercial, like I like how, I think it's Hulu that does it where you watch like an hour show.
Oh, you can choose at the beginning to watch like a 2 minute.
Yeah, there's a commercial or then like every break, there's like a little 15 second commercial.
Right.
The problem is they haven't figured out how to make shorter commercials yet, which I think would really help. I've talked to people about this, like, why wouldn't they make 30-second commercials? Make them 10 seconds. And it's like...
We don't make
them. Well, when we shoot commercials, we like them to be 30 seconds because that's... Yeah, but why not also shoot a 10-second one?
Because we don't do that. We don't do that. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
There's a whole institutional lag also at the advertising industry that's like, we shoot 30-second commercials. It's like, we'll shoot 15s. Well, I don't know how you'd possibly do that. Yeah. You know,
how about 10-second scripts?
Like, I don't know how you would do that. It's impossible.
Yeah, ad sales people in general are really 5-6 years behind everything. They're like your aunt.
Well, they're also
how about this Britney Spears?
They have the big expense accounts. You've been to those lunches and dinners with those guys. It's like, why would you want to change? That's their job, is to put on a suit and take people out to lunch. You know, it's like they don't want to change their that model.
Yeah, now it's like the last 6-7 months, it's been streaming video.
Yeah.
What are your plans for streaming video? What a web series. We're gonna do a web series.
You should put a little webcam up in here like Rush Limbaugh does.
Yeah, but I'm naked from the waist down. I don't think people want to see that. Thank you for being cool about that, by the way.
I'm liberal like that.
But you know what? Let's break this into two parts. Can you hang around for a second part?
Sure. I think I could.
Cool. We'll be back. Check for part two. Matt Stone and the BS Report.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.